Vosi Prava. We're doing the Maral. What page is it in that edition? Page Yud in the standard editions and in this the Rav Hartman editions. Vosi Prava. And then Rava added, V'anan ke'etzbata b'kira l'sbara. And we're like, our generation is like trying to stick your finger into wax. That's how little we penetrate when it comes to our svara, our own logic. So we've been going along the lines as the Gemara describes generation after generation, how they describe their lagging behind their predecessors. Each generation describes how minuscule they are compared to the early generation. And we're up to Rava's line that when it comes to our logic, so our logic compared to the earlier generations, well, it's like trying to stick your finger into a wall of wax. You get in a little bit, but that's about it. Perush, meaning, says the Maharal, Hamuskalut she'adam asig me'atzmo. There are concepts in Talmud that we can attain ourselves, that involve our own logic. You don't need a tradition. You could say a kal v'chomer on your own. There are areas of logic which you can apply on your own within the Talmud. That in these areas, there are things which a person can be able to figure out on his own. And there are things that he has to have a tradition. Well, these are things that a person can figure out on his own. When it comes to that, it's like trying to stick your finger into wax. Because if you try to stick your finger into wax, even though the finger, so to speak, makes a mark in the wax, but it's not caught well in the wax. You could move your finger around in the wax when you push into wax. In the same way, our logic, our logic isn't so strong that if you wanted to argue with it, you'd be stuck. A good logical proof is proof that you stick it in and it's like a nail in the wall. You can't move it. You try to prove against it, you can't. Well, our generation, says Rava, our generation is like sticking your finger into wax. You could shift it this way, you could shift it that way. Our logic, as much as we try to prove something, you could argue this way, you could argue that way. Our logic is not so powerful. You could argue this way and that. Because our logic is not so powerful. So that was Rava's line. Vosif Ravashi, and then Ravashi added, and we are like sticking your finger into a castle. That's how easily we forget what we learned. Even when we finally catch on to something, says Rav Ashi, it's not something that we acquire in the way that you can't lose it, but we easily forget what we learned. It's like sticking your finger into the castle. There's nothing holding on to it. At any moment, you could pull it out. That's the way our learning is, says Rav Ashi. We know it when we learn it, fine. But at any time, we could lose it. We don't have a strong holding on what we learn. And even our tradition, being that we could lose it so easily, it's not called that we have a Kabbalah, that we really received the strong tradition. To have a tradition means that they can't take it away from you. It's a child that every time he goes to bed, he puts his hand on his eyes and says, Shema, and that's a second nature. You can't take that from him. It's the person who had Alzheimer's, who couldn't recognize his wife, who couldn't figure out how to turn on the light in the room, but he knew that he washed his hands when he got out of bed. That was as clear to him as the knowledge that this is my right hand and that's my left hand. It was clear to him to be modest, and it was clear to him to daven, and I saw it. I merited to rent an apartment next to a big rabbi who had Alzheimer's. And it was an amazing sight to see. Here you have a man who looks in the mirror and asks, who's that? But there were so many things that were a part of him. There were things in halacha and things in chassidut So the same is true about a tradition that you receive. Rav Ashi says, we forget so much that it's as though we have no tradition. We have a tradition. Rav Ashi compiled the whole Babylonian Talmud. But he says, I know what the earlier generations looked like. And being that we can so easily forget, that's also an indication on what kind of handle we have on what we learn. So what have we been trying to illustrate? Each generation was honest and showed us, they testified where they themselves were lacking. They were pointing out, look at where we are lacking. Look at where we don't live up to par to our predecessors. And if we find that the wellsprings of wisdom were diminishing from the generation of Rabbi Elazar ben Shemua to Rabbi Yochanan. You're talking about all of two or three generations. And Rabbi Yochanan says, I'm nothing compared to him. That was three generations in the days of the Mishnah. Sha'arei Rabbi haya talmido shel Rabbi Elazar ben Shemua. How do I figure? He says, Rabbi was Rabbi Elazar's disciple, kedita bivamot perkarel. Rabbi Yochanan haya talmido shel Rabbi, and Rabbi Yochanan was Rabbi's disciple. So you're talking about all of two or three generations. Kedita perkel trufot b'shmaita didusa. V'arei lo hayu rak beto gimel dorot ala yoter. There was a maximum of three generations that passed, and Rabbi Yochanan says, ooh, they were giants. Where am I compared to them? Umaya adena. So what's happened now? Tens of generations passed since then. It's as though the whole land has become arid, and you don't find a morsel of wisdom. Except this is the way they spoke. What are we going to say? We're not left with any metaphor that we can say about how minuscule we are compared to them. And so, why is it that we're so minuscule? Because when we start reading what they said, it's like reading a book that's in another language. Go read the Talmud. But he's saying, even if you understand the language, you're coming to something you don't understand. And it's even more so when they start discussing philosophy, what we call Kabbalah, Agada, Medrash, when they're really describing the depths of wisdom, well, we don't begin to understand what they're talking about. So we read the simplistic story. We read about people getting off a boat, walking on an island, making themselves lunch, and suddenly the island starts shifting and it turns out it's a big fish. So we read the story, fantastic, I have a good bedtime story for my son. Okay. But they weren't talking about a boat, and they weren't talking about lunch, and they weren't talking about a fish. They said it in those terms, so simpletons like me have a nice story. If they came to the rabbi's speech, they heard the story. The rabbis understood the code. They knew what a fish stood for, they knew what lunch stood for, they knew what a boat stood for, they knew what the sea stood for. Ve'afim navin mami divreihem. And even if we do understand something of what they say, a person has to realize that his understanding doesn't even begin to understand. Abaye already said, when we try to understand earlier generations, Abaye, who's master of Talmud, you don't have a page in Talmud where you won't find Abaye. Abaye says, Abaye, compared to the earlier generations, is like trying to stick a peg into the wood. You barely get in a centimeter. That's how far I get in understanding the earlier generations. So if that's what Abaye says, what could we say about ourselves? So, where have I been leading up to, says the Maharal? Bottom line, when we find things that the earlier generations said that seem to be counterintuitive, they seem to contradict our logic. So a person starts thinking all kinds of thoughts about the earlier generations. He has to realize that the fault is in him. He's a fool on two counts. He's a fool because he doesn't understand what they were talking about. He's a fool because he thinks he's smart.
שאם לא כן, היה אומר, כי להשמת הדור האחרון הוא כמו שהוא אמת. Because if not for that, he'd at least recognize that the problem is that the time that's passed, look at where I'm holding. I don't begin to understand what they're talking about. And those of you who have been here long enough know that very often I say, I don't know what this means. I have no clue what this means. Very often we'll learn Midrashim and I'll say, Chazal said it, they knew what they were talking about. I have no idea what this says. They say, you blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah, the Satan gets all scared that God's coming to judge him. He thinks it's judgment day. Okay. When I was in third grade, that made sense to me. But hopefully I've evolved since then. So now, what's the sense in that? I have no clue. So we learned the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah that says that. Fine, so the Gemara says that. But what did the Gemara mean? I don't know what the Gemara meant. But I realized they were intelligent people. So I say, I don't know. It's not that doesn't make sense. It's that I don't know. I'm the one that's lacking. ואם יאמר כי כל החכמים בדור הזה קיבלו מדע, וכל הנבונים קיבלו השכל נגד ראשונים, הרי לא יסתכל רק באחת. If a person would only say, all the wise men in this generation, they don't know. All the people who have understanding, look, they don't really understand. So then at least I'm left being a fool on one count, because I don't know. But I'm not a double fool. A guy who says they're stupid, well then, he's a fool on two counts. A, he doesn't understand, but B, he also doesn't appreciate them. A person should at least be a fool only on one count. I'm a fool, what can I do? I don't know. Okay, that I can't avoid, I really don't know. שאינו עומד על דברי חוכמת הראשונים, אבל יודע הוא משיג ערך עצמו. At least a person should know his own place. ודבר זה נחשבה לחוכמה. And that's considered a wisdom in its own right. And this is, I think, one of the first points that a person has to learn when he's approaching Torah. On the one hand, we try to understand everything. We question everything. On the other hand, we have to realize that there's a huge part between us and them, and that we're not going to understand everything they said. Definitely not in the beginning. The truth is not at the end either. We're still going to be distant from their wisdom. But we'll have many answers as we move along. But we have to realize the distance between us and them. And that's something which, when a guy walks into Machon Meir, he's not accustomed to. The Western world trains us to think that we're the smartest generation. Look at us. We have iPhones and iPads and everything. Look at how smart we are. So the average kid knows that he knows more than his father does. My dad calls me up when he's stuck on the computer, so I must be smarter than him. No. There's the area of technology where we keep advancing. In science, we keep advancing. In tradition, we keep losing. So in the tradition of Torah, we're one generation further from Sinai. We've lost. So at least a person should recognize his own place, and that's a wisdom in its own right. The Mishnah in Avos says, you want to acquire Torah? And there are steps to acquiring Torah. One of the steps is, Yodat Mikomo. A person has to know his own place. And that you have to learn that. It's not easy. Initially, we all think we're brilliant. So the Talmud, they didn't know what they were talking about. The answer is no, they knew exactly what they were talking about. I don't know what they're talking about. We already said, says the Maharal, that not many people are smart enough to know their own place. Even though you think it's easy, Shekarov Adam Latzmo Lakir Amitat Atzmo. Who do you know better than yourself? But we make believe like we're different than we really are. We don't want to admit where we're really holding. So we think we're much smarter than we really are. But if a person is truthful and says, no, this is where I'm holding. And he doesn't try to misrepresent himself. So then even though he's lacking, at least he's atoned for it and that he's honest. וזה כי המכיר והמרגיש בחסרון השולו, הרי הוא מרגיש ומכיר המעלה. Because if you're willing to be honest about what you don't know, then you also know what you do know. Someone who isn't clear about what he doesn't know, then he doesn't even know what he does know. That's one of the things. I used to have a class. Guys repeatedly asked for this class and then dropped out of it. This was an ongoing thing for about 4 years till I stopped the class. I used to have a class on the Parsha where we'd go word by word in the Parsha and just ask a series of questions. It's probably the most boring class you could ever imagine. Because all you do is ask questions. But you know what? After 10 psukim of asking questions and questions and questions on each word, suddenly you start seeing, hey, there are so many ways to understand these psukim. And suddenly in your own mind, you start developing a direction, multiple directions in understanding the psukim.
And people who went to those classes ended up understanding Rashi on a totally different level. And on their own, they would come up with Rashi's answers. Or they'd come up with other Rishonim, the direction that Rishonim took. And the reason is, if you read a Pasuk and you don't stop to ask yourself 50 questions on each Pasuk, you didn't understand anything. But you don't know what you do know, and you don't know what you don't know. So it just seems like, yeah, that's what the Pasuk says. But wait a second, there's so much to discuss about that Pasuk. Shlach lecha anashim. What does the word shlach mean? Our parsha. Yes, I understand that the word shlach can be loosely translated as send. But is the word send a command? An offer? Shlach means your shaliach? Does shlach come from the root shaliach? What does the word lecha mean? As per your request? As per your desire? For your benefit? The word lecha. Does lecha refer to the Jewish people at large, or does it refer to Moshe? Which will ultimately be a question. Does Moshe share any of the blame of what's going to happen with the spies? But part of that question comes back to the word lecha and back to the word shlach. But if I never stop to analyze what the word shlach and lecha means, I have no clue that in the very beginning of the parasha I have possibly an answer to many questions that will arise later. But you understand, you could ask many questions. I only gave 3 on each word. You could ask many, many more. Okay? So the Maharal tells us a fantastic point. Guys, if you've got nothing tonight other than this one line, you should know you've got a tremendous asset, a tremendous tool for learning Torah. If you know what you don't know, then you also can know what you do know. But if you have not yet defined what you don't know, then you don't either know what you do know. Guys, think about that. I'm telling you, this has been maybe the line that I've learned Talmud, Mishnah, and Tanakh. All of them, this has been the guiding principle. This line in the Maharal. And that's why those of you who have learned in the more advanced classes will note, we don't have an advanced enough class for that. No, we don't have that class here. But in the more advanced classes, which we don't have here, I will spend much of the time asking questions. And initially it sounds frustrating, because all I'm saying is, I don't know this, and I don't know this, and I don't know this, and I don't know this. Sounds like all I'm doing is saying, I don't know. But when you put together all the I don't knows, you start getting a picture of potential understandings, and you start getting a picture of what you do know. Once you've defined what you don't know, then you start saying what you do know.
Is this something natural that most people think about, or not really?
You have to stop and think. If you stop and think, you'll think about it. It's very convenient to read and just say, Shlach lecha anashim, send for you,
mate.
I don't know. Yeah.
Is that the order we should do it in? Because isn't it easier to think what we do know? Because we know much. There's so much we don't know to sit and think what we don't know.
At your stage of the game, where you're still learning how to learn Talmud and things like that, so yeah, you have to begin by first understanding, you know, understanding the words, seeing what you do understand, right? Right. But maybe when you're learning Parsha, you could ask yourself questions. Take 5 minutes and analyze a little bit and ask yourself, what does this mean? And what does this mean? And what did I understand? What did I not understand? Ki mi sheino yodea b'malai no mikir b'chisaron. You have to understand something's benefit in order to understand what's lacking. And so when you understand what's missing on some level, you're also starting to understand what's present. And once you understand, once you have an appreciation for something, you're closer to it than someone who has no appreciation for it. Doesn't mean you could do it, doesn't mean you have it, but you're closer to having it than someone who doesn't. Take classical music. You have a guy who has no appreciation for music, well, he's also not going to play music. He doesn't begin to have anything. When you have an appreciation, you're at least one step closer to being able to play it, to understanding where you're headed. Shoto ein lo kiruv klal el ma'ala. If you don't have an appreciation, you're nowhere near it. V'zeo tachlit ha'madrega elyona b'dorotenu. So the top level we could get to in our generation is hakarat ha'chesronot min ha'ma'ala. Recognizing our faults, recognizing how distant we are from the earlier generations, and in that, recognizing also their great level. And in that, we start getting closer to their level. It's not when we say, oh, I'm brilliant, that's when I become brilliant. Because that's the antithesis of that. When you say, I understand, and I understand the Talmud as well as they did, and I understand the Pesukim as well as they did, then you're as distant as can be from their understanding. You're ignoring the differences, so you're also, you're not beginning to understand what they did understand. The Gemara has a line. So long as the flesh is living, it feels the knife. Once the flesh is dead, it doesn't feel the knife. So it's the same thing. If you're alive, then you feel what you're lacking. You feel what you're missing. If you don't feel what you're missing, so that's like dead flesh. You're right. You don't understand. You don't understand. Whatever is dead doesn't feel any lacking. If you feel like you're missing something, that's a sign of life. So our level, where can we get? To realize how distant we are from them. That's the first step. That's as high as we can get. If we don't recognize that, that's because we're totally missing it. And that's something which you guys can see. It's very interesting. Very often a guy will come in here, new guy to class, and I'll quote something, a pshat, and I'll say, I don't think that's right. Now, I feel like telling the guy, tell me, how much Tanakh did you learn? And how many commentaries did you learn? So why do you think if you didn't finish the whole Tanakh that you can give a call on what's right or wrong? What I usually say, I've never said that, but what I'll usually say is I didn't say my own pshat. What I say is a quote, Rashi, the Metzudah, the Radak, I'm not inventing. As a guy learns more, he suddenly starts having an appreciation. Wait, there's a tradition here that they're not making things up. So then his reply starts being different. Well, you know what? That's step number one. The more we advance, the more we have an appreciation for the distance between us and them. The more we have an appreciation, the closer we are to where they are. And this is a difficult formula to swallow. It's counterintuitive. We spend our life trying to understand. And here we're being taught that first you have to understand that you don't understand. But if you think about it, you'll realize that that is step one to understanding. And I don't remember if it was Aristotle or Plato. One of them wrote that when a student enters the academy, he should spend 3 years without asking a question. Because for the first 3 years, his questions aren't worth asking. He doesn't even know what he does and doesn't understand. So he's not going to have good questions, but he won't even know that. And some of you guys have undoubtedly been to classes where some nudnik walks in and he's a fresh guy off the block and he's asking questions and he can't move on with the class and he doesn't realize that everyone in the class knows the answer but him. But to him, the question is a brilliant question. Well, that's because he doesn't even understand what he doesn't understand. And that's what the Maharal is saying. The first step to understanding is having an appreciation to what we don't know. And part of that is having an appreciation to the greatness of the Chachamim in the Talmud. And then we can start understanding what they have to say. But this is all introductory to a whole book that's going to really contend with the claims against Chazal. Remember, he's going to go head on. We're almost finished with the introduction. He's going to go head on with all the basic claims against Chazal. That's the purpose of the book. But he says, before we're going to do that, let's first appreciate that we're not where they are. It's legitimate that we don't understand them. Quite the contrary. The greater we are, the more we'll appreciate the distance between us and them. Now, I'll just share with you that when I was a youngster, I had certain teachers that I had a great appreciation for. And I remember thinking to myself, you know, he's very, very smart. This Rashi, well, I think I understand the Gemara better than him, but the Rebbe, he's brilliant. And then I'd see the Rebbe had such admiration for Rashi, and it was a contradiction to me. I remember as a youngster, it was a contradiction. I appreciate the Rebbe, but Rashi, no, I don't understand Rashi. You know, I think my pshat's better than Rashi. And it took many years before I started saying, wait a second, if he has an appreciation for Rashi, and he's learned more than me, and I have an appreciation for him, so maybe I'm missing something that I don't have an appreciation for Rashi. But it takes a certain maturity, it takes a certain understanding. And I think it's normal that a thinking person begins with questioning. And when he begins with questioning, then he's not going to have so much respect for the people he's questioning, because on some level, there's that feeling of, prove to me that you're worth my respect. Why should I respect you? And I think part of the formula is, well, if you don't know enough in order to understand that they deserve your respect. Think for a minute who does deserve your respect. And if they know more than you and they feel that way, so then at least give it a chance. I know that this is a very hard point when a person begins the tshuva process. This is one of the most difficult points. Because in order to do the tshuva process, a person has to be a thinker and has to be an individualist. Because every person that did the tshuva process took a step away from a society that went in one direction and they went a different direction. And so then you're not apt to believe something just because someone says so. So I'm saying, okay, I was also there. I also remember the stage where I was thinking, the rabbi I could respect, but Rashi? No, I don't know. So remember, if you're respecting the rabbi and he's learned this many, many more years than you, so let's at least hold it as a possibility, even if you're not willing to accept it yet, that there's a reason why the rabbi has such respect for Rashi and the earlier generations. And with time, we'll see. Again, I'm purposely sharing with you that this was a process that I personally also underwent. It takes time. If you're hearing this maral and it doesn't resonate with you at this point, that's fine. Hear it, shelve it, and leave it as a possibility. You don't have to accept it yet. If the maral said it, eventually I expect that you will see that what he's saying is right. But it's also legitimate if right now it does not resonate with you, and if right now it seems very distant to you, fine. But it's important to know that such a concept exists. And with time, Be'ezrat Hashem, as you grow, you'll have a greater appreciation for this. Yes?
So when we have this understanding, we're having a hard time understanding how one person was one conclusion, and we're trying to establish yourself that, you know, they're probably right, we can see that they're right and we're just lacking something. How do we take that to mix when we see like some two different people having like two gedolim having two opposite opinions? How do we say, you know, I understand that they're both right even though they're both saying exact opposite thing?
This deserves a long answer. I'll give you a very short answer because we're already a half hour over time and we have to bring the night to a close. But in truth, if you want, Be'ezrat Hashem, in 2 weeks we'll have a late Thursday night again, and I'll be happy to give a longer answer. The fact that two people give two diametrically opposed views, we have to understand where that comes from, and then we'll understand how we can say they are both a part of the truth. Now, if you want, we expanded on this in a Drasha Saran class. The Ran expanded on it, on the concept of truth, and Elu Ve'elu Divrei Elokim Chaim. And we expanded on it. I think it's the fifth speech of the Drasha Saran. So you could find it there. It's on my website, and I hope it's also on Mechon Meir's website. I think many of the classes were also in the video. I don't know. On my website, torahforme.com, you could find it. When Hashem gave the Torah, Hashem gave us laws of derivation. And Hashem showed Moshe how using those laws of inference, those laws of logic, those laws of derivation, he can derive what?
It's like
Yud Gimel Midot. Yeah, those are part of them. There are many more than that. Hashem showed him how using those laws, he can derive the answer to new questions. And Hashem also showed him how using those laws of inference, those laws of logic, he could reach diametrically opposed conclusions. He could either prove that it's mutter or usser from two different sources using logic. So Moshe said, okay, but how will I get the bottom line? So God said, you'll put together a court, and the court will learn these laws, and they will distill their minds, and they will be as impartial as a human being can be. And then they will argue it out. And at the end of their argument, each side will explain to the other one why they think that their line of reasoning is most logical. And then each side will evaluate. And then they'll come to account. And at the end of the day, there's the human factor that I made that two people do not see it the same way. Even if they're as logical as can be and as impartial as can be, what seems most logical to A will not seem most logical to B. And then you come to account and you go by the majority opinion. Is one opinion Torah and the other opinion not? No, they are both Torah and they are both potential halacha. We will have to rule in accordance with only one of them. This is a physical world where only one conclusion can live. But that doesn't mean that the other opinion is wrong. It just means the other opinion is not halacha. That's the concept of Elu Ve'elu Divrei Elokim Chayim. And that's why we respect both opinions. Again, this is a short version. You deserve a longer answer, Be'ezrat Hashem, on a different occasion.